Welcome to the Feed Central Hay Matters podcast, your go-to source for all things hay-related in Australia. I'm your host, John Paul Driver. In today's episode, we're joined by Dennis Johnson. Also, Tim Ford is here, and I'll have Tim do the introduction for Dennis.
Thanks, John Paul. Great to be here today. I'd like to introduce and welcome Dennis Johnson to the podcast. Denna is a long-term family member of the Johnson's family, very well-known family in South Australia and across Victoria for their pioneering expertise in the export hay industry. I also understand that Johnson's is turned 100 years last year as a family business. So Dennis has been played a major part in that, handed the business over to the children now to run, but I'll let Dennis talk more about that as the podcast goes forward. Dennis provided great mentorship to myself and Megan, great friendship and great mentorship through a number of years as we were starting our business, and Megan and I will be forever grateful for the friendship and the mentoring that from Dennis and Pam as a family business. So welcome to the podcast, Dennis.
Thanks, Tim. Pleasure to be here.
I had the good fortune to come and visit your operation in Kapunda, and Corey was the one that gave us the tour that day.
Oh, beautiful, beautiful. And did you get a word? Did you get a word in with Corey or not?
I was just soaking it all in. Okay. We got to see the pellet mill and the press, and it was wonderful, absolutely
good,
wonderful.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Like I mentioned, I've had some of that famous wine as well.
Well, the boys are enjoying it right now, so we'll probably have a few more as we go along. That won't be a problem. No, it's good to see.
Yeah, so Tim mentioned, now you might have to tell the story behind JTJ, the 100-year anniversary. So tell me the story.
Well, last year we celebrated our 100th year as a family business. Obviously, we commenced in 1923 at a little town called Stockport, which is about 30 k's away from here. My grandfather, John Theodore Johnson, started the business initially with his brother-in-law, Benno Rohde, but a year later he bought him out, and Benno went off to do other work. And from there they started cutting chaff, being involved in the hay business. 100 years later, we're still involved in the hay business. It's in our blood, it's in our DNA, and that's something that the family, from the second generation, which was my father Max and Uncle Clyde. Third generation was myself, cousin Peter, Christopher, and my brother Jack. We've all either retired or passed on, and now the fourth generation is managing the business. It's Mark and Robbie, and we're fortunate enough that we've now got the fifth generation working within the company. So the two of the granddaughters and one grandson. One started about a year ago, and the other two just started in the last few months. So it's very exciting. We're very happy to see the fifth generation come through. We're very happy for it.
What a great story.
Yeah.
Reflections on running a family hay business. What is it to keep a business going for that duration of time?
It's a good question. It's, to keep a business to go for over that length of period requires a bit of innovation, a bit of foresight, a bit of gambling, I must say, because I think anyone in business who doesn't gamble is a liar, because we all do take some risk in trying to achieve some bigger goals. But vision is also a big thing. And two, I mean, I'll give credit to my forebearers, obviously my grandfather, who worked very, very hard. And then my father and uncle. My father, Max, was a wonderful entrepreneur, innovator. He really went out to look at new markets. We started back in 1964, actually, was our first export market to Singapore. Till today, which is 60 years later, we are still supplying the same customer in Singapore. It's a credit to what Max did, what he taught us, what we do, is to carry that tradition through, and is to look after your customers. We really focus a lot on customer relationships. Customer, of course, is paramount. But then again, on the other side of the fence, we also want to have the same connection with our growers. So we've taken a lot of time, a lot of work in seeking new customers throughout the world, expanding our market share, but at the same time working with our growers and with our suppliers, our service operators here in Australia. And the other important thing, of course, is the staff. We've had a number of people here still working here. You know, some are well over 40 years service, and many of them now in their 30 years, and we have a heap of them there 20 years. Either we're paying them too much or we look after them. I think it's a bit of give and take. They enjoy it. They get well rewarded. And if they're happy, we're all happy. So I think it's a bit of a combination of everything, John, just making it all work together.
A point of interest here, what was that first product that was exported to Singapore?
Chaff, yeah, chopped hay. Then we, after we started chaffing, we then got into oat milling, and we used to do clip and graded oats for the racehorse industry, mostly into Singapore, Malaysia, and to the Hong Kong Jockey Club. After too much competition in the end, after about 30 years, we pulled out of both the chaffing and the oat milling, and we just concentrated on the pellet milling, which we started in 1976. And then in 1987, I ventured into the export hay game into Asia. Just to give you a bit of an idea about the export hay business for us, you know, why did we get involved? I suppose it might be one of the questions. It was really got involved because we wanted to sell pellets. I went around, did a tour around the East Coast, and particularly Sydney and Melbourne, to the Japanese trading houses. It was at that time the Americans and the Canadians were selling hundreds of thousands of tonnes of alfalfa pellets and alfalfa cubes into Japan. And I thought, well, shit, if they can do that, we can get a little bit of the action. But every place I went to in Sydney or Melbourne, all they wanted to talk about was hay. So I thought, well, one way to do this is we'll give them hay, but then we can introduce our pellets to them at the same time. So we went out in 1987 and bought a $45,000 single bale press machine with metal straps. So we put two little bales together, left the strings on, squashed them up, and all by hand, again, the machine, but most of, you know, clipping the straps by hand, put the bales on an elevator, and some poor little bugger had to buddy load the bales in the container one by one, you know, and on a 40-degree day. She was a good job. And that's how we started, and from there we transitioned into, you know, upgrading the machinery, getting more, not automated back in those days, but getting more efficient. And we got away from small bales, went into round bales. That went on for a number of years. We made a new hay press, what we call SCB, which is a single compressed bale that had a sleeve over it. Yeah, that was a beautiful product, but of course it was very slow as such. Like, you know, the plant would only do 8-9 tonne an hour. We had one of those here and one in Victoria. As we went through the, we had a joint venture going in Victoria at that time with Asahi Industries. And so back in 95, we formed this joint venture with Asahi. We had two factories in Victoria, one at Bort and one pending to go into Horsham. And again, it was a really dry period. We struggled getting raw materials. And my friend Malcolm May from Balco was kind enough to come along and buy the Bort factory from us, so which was very nice of him. So we still talk about that today over lunch. From there, we Johnson's and Asahi, we then built the Horsham factory, and that partnership now, we're going to celebrate our 30 years next year, so which has been a fantastic involvement. So just carry on with that. And, you know, after we, back in the end of 2005, prior to that, Chris and I went to Canada to see the Hunterwood. We heard about the Hunterwood technology when hay pressing. A lot of American and Canadian companies of using this technology. And so we had a tour around and, you know, to a lot of the factories. Very good. We came back convinced that this is our future, which we did. And in 2005, we commissioned our first Hunterwood plant. Production went from 8 tonne an hour to 18 tonne an hour. You don't be too smart to work it out that the margins or the costs dramatically decreased. There was actually a decent profit in that business by upgrading this new equipment or new machinery. 2007, we actually then did the same thing at Horsham with the joint venture. And those two plants are still currently running, one here in Kapunda and one in Horsham. And the next step after that is we finished up in building a new hay factory in Doon, just out of Horsham in Victoria. That's really only got completed in the last year or so, last year. It's a really state-of-the-art hay plant. It will do, you know, well in the 20 tonnes per hour. Got a capacity of, if they wanted to do it, 150,000 tonne a year. We're also moving the Hunterwood Press from Horsham, and we're going to move it out to the site at Doon. We're going to have a lot of hay or pressing capacity over in Victoria. And then in December, just last year, a few months ago, we finalised a purchase of another hay factory in Western Australia. So now Johnson's are located in three states and working hard because, you know, the seasons haven't been that good in the last couple of years. You can't keep spending it all the time. We've got to start getting something back.
I didn't realise how good of a tour that Tim had given me when I was there, because we were past that press facility at Bort. And of course, you may know that I interviewed Malcolm May earlier today. So it's just what a wonderful small world. You're talking about expansion here.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, there's some vision for the future. Where's the business headed?
Well, we've invested, you know, large sums of money in the last 12 months, 2 years, in the upgrading of Victoria, now Western Australia. Prior to that, 7 or 8 years ago, we did a $20 million upgrade for our pellet mill or feed mill here. We purchased a 2018, a feedlot. So it's got a capacity of 10,000 head. We're also a partner in a freight broking business in Melbourne. Also a partner in a logistics company that sells and loads feed out of Darwin and Townsville. Loads ships, does stevedoring, things like that. I don't know how much further they can go, to be quite honest with you, John, but maybe they'll find something. And
no shortage of ambition in any of this.
Well, there is a bit more. I mean, one of our bigger target markets is the horse market, firstly here in Australia and then secondly in overseas. You know, we'd like to think maybe there's a small place to play in the domestic pet market, but that's a little while off yet. It's a lot of work involved. Yeah, to be honest with you, I think they might have put the handbrake on a bit, and we'll just pay for the other ones first while I'm still alive.
That's quite a number of businesses. That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
As we think about the hay industry, there's a number of challenges. What comes to mind first?
Probably the two obvious things is the market, also supply. Now, I know that's pretty simplistic, but I'm really concerned that within Australia and in the United States in particular, that we've probably got a oversupply. Now, the thing that keeps supply under control is droughts, floods, supply of raw material. And this happens, you know, we had the long drought in California for, 8-10 years, I think, wasn't it? Supply was very difficult, water was tight. Now in Australia, the last 2 or 3 years, if we haven't had droughts, we've had floods. Each state's had its own problems. Year before last, and our crop here got 80-90% got washed out, you know, just black shit hay. You know, this year the hay was beautiful, but the straw's terrible, which in itself balances itself out, you know, the supply and demand scenario. At some stage, there's going to be where, you know, the market, particularly in Asia, can only take X amount. And that's, you know, between the three major countries, Australia, particularly the United States, of course, and Canada, and a little bit comes in from Italy and Spain, but Argentina a little bit, but not much. So the big three, as we say, I think there might be some rationalisation is going to happen in time because, you know, they're very concerned about the price of the product up there in Asia. You know, sustainability for the farmers here when the grain prices are so high, you know, they've got to look at their revenue for their own enterprise. And I don't blame them, but if they see in their rotation that that hay doesn't stack up to the to other parts of cropping, you know, it's their financial decision. So we then got to be able to, as an industry, you know, and that's like with Tim's business along with ours, that we got to be able to show to the growers that what we're offering is going to be a product that they can sell, that we can give to the consumer, that they can buy with confidence, and the grower at the same time, of course, is going to be making a few dollars out of it, which is very important. We down here in Australia, where you may or may not know that we have this really problem with the dual monopoly in the supermarkets, Coles and Woolworths, and it's a big, big thing happening at the moment, particularly at federal government level, and this monopoly is causing great headaches. Forget about the consumer, thus paying enough, but more so the supplier, the grower. You know, they're being screwed to the nth, and we, you know, being involved in the cattle industry, in the feedlot, we know exactly what people are saying. What will happen, of course, if the growers aren't rewarded for their effort, they won't grow it. So that's what will happen with the hay business. So we've got to ensure that the growers are going to make their business sustainable, and at the same time that we've got to ensure that the customer can make his business sustainable by making it affordable. So in between, that's where you do the work, and that's in your production, your shipping, your logistics, all that type of stuff. That's how that works. And that's the only way you can make the business to be successful in the long term. We don't take this business as a year by year or it's a long thing. Agriculture is about the long term. It's not about the short term. And, you know, we have a bad year in 10. That's fantastic. We've only had one. I've been here working at Johnson's for over 50 years, and I can honestly tell you we've only had one bad year in 50 years in our area. That's why we're in this particular area of South Australia. Sustainability, constant supply.
What are the opportunities for the hay industry?
Obviously, the one at the moment is China, you know, for China to expand their dairy industry. That is going up and down, as we know. Number of factories, about 20 factories, didn't get registered for a number of years. We all know the particular political reasons for all this. It's now opened up again, but it's opening up, you know, quite slowly at the moment for a lot of us. But I think there's a lot of companies being quite wary about, you know, dealing with China, because you just don't know what's around the corner. If it does work well, they'll become a large market. But I think we should be looking outside of that, and, you know, there's obviously obvious ones is the Middle East for the export market. It's got a lot of potential. You know, they tell you over there in Saudi Arabia and the UAE that when they buy the alfalfa hay from America, they're buying the American water, which, of course, does concern a lot of people in the States, because they're just pumping out billions of gigalitres or gallons of water just to feed the animals and the dairy farms and the camels in the Middle East. I don't think that's sustainable. The Middle East has stopped watering their crops. They need imported fodder. They love the American alfalfa, like the American timothy. One day they might like Australian oat and hay, which is better than your timothy, by the way. But that's another discussion for another day.
Tim must have warned you, huh?
But there is, as the emerging markets is in volume, but Southeast Asia in itself is becoming, getting away from this developed nation status. Indonesia, Cambodia, Laos, not Myanmar, but Thailand,
Vietnam.
Yeah. We supply a lot of feed on ships that take the cattle up to Indonesia and to Vietnam and sure. That sort of stuff. So, you know, their economies and their way of living is improving, and they want the better quality. They need protein. They need milk and they need meat, and of course they can't grow the sources of feed that we can grow here to make that sustainable, but also make it profitable. So there's a lot of avenues out there, but it all takes time. But I think time's on our side, to be honest with you.
That was a lot of opportunities. I like hearing that there is some wind in our sails as an export industry.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Do you have any closing thoughts?
We're in a family business with a fifth generation. We're just here for the long haul. We just hope everything goes well for the industry over the ensuing years.
This has been absolutely wonderful, and thank you so much for your contribution here.
No worries, John. Good to talk to you.